Welcome back. Today we are joined by Jason Sao. Jason, can you just introduce yourself?
Hi everyone, I'm Jason. I'm a student and a peer of Art J and Arjun, and I'm very glad to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, so Jay and I got to know Jason in our econ policy class where we discussed various topics with him, but the minimum wage discussion was particularly interesting. And we thought he had a really good argument against the minimum wage, which is I think it's a popular stance within economic circles, but outside of economic circles, it's sometimes not as accepted. And we want to give him some time to talk about what he believed, what his rationale was, and to give the viewers an idea of an economic analysis of the minimum wage. So, yeah, Jay, if you want to get started with some questions, yeah.
Yeah, it's great to have you on today, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, like, what got you interested in the minimum wage? Why have you taken a stance on this issue?
Well, I think that in many cases, in when we're discussing economic theory or discussing economic policy in general, there's this mistaken idea that government is the magical solution to all of the societal problems we see. Rent control is one of the best examples, and a similarly significant example is the minimum wage. And in these cases where people try to think that government may be able to provide the best solution to a societal issue, in most cases, it is far better to pursue an approach centered around the free market and centered around making sure that the incentives that the businesses and consumers have align with the goal of maximizing utility. And I think that the minimum wage is a particularly prevalent example of this mismatch between government and the actual legitimate economic interest of the people.
Yeah, so given that background information, thank you. That was informative. Could you just give us a background of your stance on the minimum wage and your rationale? And if you could just throw in some history and analysis, just kind of from an economic perspective, that'd be great.
Sure. So, from a historical perspective, the minimum wage was first introduced in America by progressive reformers. This was during the Progressive Era. These reformers called for a minimum living wage that would, in theory, support workers' livelihoods in the cities. At the time, the working conditions of the laborers were far below the standards of today. There were a lot of cases of child labor, for example, a lot of cases of extremely long working hours for workers. And I think that these reformers came from a good faith perspective and that they thought that this would be able to serve as a legitimate government solution to this problem. They introduced a lot of minimum wage in the state levels. And after the Supreme Court reversed itself and ruled that minimum wage regulations were constitutional. It was later introduced in the federal level as well with the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. This codified a federal minimum wage of 25 cents per hour, and over the past century, Congress has gradually increased this rate to its current rate of $7.25. Now, this federal rate isn't the rate that's applied to all the states within the union. There are many states, mostly in more economically developed or more liberal-leaning states, have a far higher statewide minimum wage. The most prevalent example, and the one that was recently in the news, was California passed a $20 minimum wage for fast food workers specifically. These type of particularly high minimum wages are actually particularly destructive to the labor market and to the economy of a specific state. And this overall approach of implementing minimum wages is particularly harmful. Now, the economic sort of rationale that is used behind the minimum wage is the idea that the labor market exists in a monopsony. Now, people often talk about monopolies, which is a market in which there's only one supplier. There's only one supplier of a good, so that they have full control over the market price. And in those cases, what we see is an economic inefficiency. In a monopsony, though, it is the exact opposite. It is that the idea that there is only one firm or one business that is demanding labor and that there are many suppliers of labor. Ergo, in this circumstance, there is a similar economic inefficiency there. The question being whether we implement a minimum wage actually hinges down on two fundamental questions, which is how monopsonistic is the low-skilled labor market and whether the minimum wage is the appropriate remedy for such an inefficiency. Undoubtedly, there's always going to be inefficiency within the labor market because there's not an infinite number of firms and businesses demanding labor. And this is empirically true. For example, if a company cuts the wages of its workers by 10%, you wouldn't envision all the workers leaving. Some of the workers will stay, some of the workers will leave. That is indicative of the fact that firms do have some power over their wage level setting abilities. The question is how much? I would argue that from that perspective, there isn't that much of a wage setting level, especially for minimum wage workers, primarily because the skills required for minimum wage jobs are low and easily transferable. And that workers are generally relatively cognizant of their wage levels, so that firms don't have as much wage setting ability as some economists will surmise. And this really hinges on the fundamental idea, which is that the minimum wage, at least currently envisioned by a lot of politicians and economists, isn't actually used to address this idea of a monopsonistic labor market, which is inefficient. Because if they were, they would never have been this high. The most efficient wage level of the market could not be, for example, $20 per hour even in a state like California. In most of these cases, the minimum wage is floated as a more of a redistributive policy or a policy that benefits existing workers. And I can delve into more why these policies specifically would actually harm the low-skilled workers, particularly those who are unemployed or the workers who are who want a sort of different path forward.
The minimum wage increases the lives, the livelihoods of low-skilled workers, because it might be inferred that if there weren't a minimum wage, the wages of these low-skilled workers would be even lower than it is today. What do you say to someone who thinks that lives for those who are in low-skilled laborers, like it's not sustainable as a livelihood, and therefore that's why we need the minimum wage to push up the living conditions of these laborers? Do you think that it's an unfair system that they are put into?
There are multiple issues with that particular frame of thinking around the minimum wage, most notably being the idea that by setting a minimum wage, by setting a wage level in which any voluntary labor agreement below that wage level is unlawful, that workers' livelihoods and employment prospects would legitimately increase. What we've seen time and time again is that the minimum wage does cause unemployment, and that this is really an inevitable part of any minimum wage regime, because the real minimum wage for people looking for work, it will always be $0, and some people will be earning that wage. They will be unemployed if a minimum wage regime persists. This is particularly the case with the California regulation, for example. After California passed a $20 per hour minimum wage for fast food workers, the new regulation has been estimated to eliminate at least 9,500 jobs, with experts predicting even more job losses. And on the business side, many small businesses are leaving California for places that they could obtain a lower wage rate and be able to do business with more friendly regulations. And this will cause further job loss and further economic problems for California. Another issue with that approach is that the minimum wage, particularly, is actually harmful towards unskilled workers, because firms hire a number of workers depending on their marginal product of labor and marginal revenue product of labor. And by implementing a minimum wage, the government makes low-skilled workers less competitive in the labor market. Imagine you're the leader of a firm, for example. You have the ability to, given your budgetary constraints, hire a selection of highly skilled workers and unskilled workers for your enterprise. Now, if you hire too many unskilled workers or too many skilled workers, that's not going to work because the marginal product of labor of that additional worker will be decreasing. But if we manually set a wage rate so that skilled workers are more competitive than unskilled workers can't lower their wage in order to compete with those workers, then what we'll likely see is that there will be less firms willing to hire these unskilled workers and more willing to turn to skilled workers instead. And this is backed by empirical data. For example, we see that the unemployment rate for people who don't have a high school degree or only have a high school degree is actually far higher than the people with college or with masters or further than or degrees even more advanced than that. The issue, however, is that under a free market system, there shouldn't be this discrepancy because the employability of a person can easily change based on the wage rate that they are willing to receive. For example, if high school laborers are less productive and less desirable, then the free market would adjust for that, and their corresponding wage rate would be lower, and hence more firms will hire more high school laborers, and in that perspective, their unemployment rates shouldn't differ, at least not as much as it is currently. The idea of a minimum wage actually fundamentally is quite discriminatory towards people who receive lower wages, who are of lower skill or of lower educational background.
Yeah, thanks for that response. Yeah, so yeah, that makes sense. I guess I was reading up on the topic, and a couple of years ago, David Card won the Nobel Prize for his work on the minimum wage, and he and his colleagues did a natural experiment. So I think in theory, a lot of these concepts, sorry if there's background noise, a lot of these concepts make sense, but I think there's still a lot of discussion as to whether as to whether in reality these hold true. And they for their study, they essentially tested they did difference in difference analysis. So they took New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and in New Jersey they raised the minimum wage, in Pennsylvania they kept it the same, and they measured the difference over time in low skill labor markets, particularly fast food. And they found that actually the minimum wage led to a marginal increase. An increase in the minimum wage led to a marginal increase in the employment, and that a lot of the costs were actually just passed on to the consumer. So you could still, even from this data and from these results, you could say, okay, prices are higher. What difference does this actually make for the standard of living of these fast food workers? But I think there is evidence in several natural experiences that sometimes an increase doesn't necessarily lead to an increase in unemployment. So I just thought I'd point that out. But it is important to note that I think the larger body of literature does agree with what you're saying, Jason. I think that is the kind of the consensus amongst academics. So yeah.
I think I'm aware of this research. I saw it on the headlines a couple of years ago. I think that it's very hard to conduct sort of experimental hypotheses surrounding minimum wage and in fact surrounding a lot of economic theories, because it's very hard to maintain a ceteris paribus environment in which all other influencing factors are eliminated. So with regards to New Jersey and Pennsylvania, for example, they're different states with different circumstances. So I have not delved deeply into the methodology of that research, but I will point out that it is very hard to conduct these level of research to a degree of certainty that would, as much as we want, or as much as it will positively influence policymaking.
So Jason,
Yeah, go on, Jay. Yeah.
just correct me if I'm wrong. So you're saying that the av so the workers who are employed with the higher minimum wage in place, they are benefited, but on average, because a higher minimum wage will therefore decrease the demand for laborers from companies, on average, the low-skill workers will be hurt because more, with an increase in the minimum wage, more employees will be fired and put out of work. Is that what you're saying?
Broadly speaking, yeah. And I really like something that Thomas Sowell always says, which is that the idea that there are no sort of economic solutions, there's only trade-offs. This isn't a verbatim quote, but he likes to point out that sort of there's always some people who benefit and some people who hurt with an economic regulation or with a particular circumstance, and that by changing a little, your government is tipping the scales of benefiting certain people and hurting others. And this is a great idea because a lot of circumstances, we are inclined to think that there is a solution that will be beneficial for everyone. That by implementing the solution, all workers in all circumstances or all businesses will benefit. I mean, in reality, there are always going to be trade-offs that we must face as policymakers. I point out that I believe that the trade-offs surrounding a minimum wage is not a beneficial sort of policy for policymakers to pursue because of the various issues that I point out. And I think that there are better trade-offs that we can make if the objective is economic redistribution. One of the tax credits that I am quite in favor of is the earned income tax credit, because the earned income tax credit subsidizes work, and that and in that area it will it promotes employment, and it provides a substantive help to a lot of lower to middle income families. I think that there are other economic solutions like that which will be a more favorable trade-off than the minimum wage.
Yeah, Jamaica's
Yeah,
working on
Jason, I
it. Continue.
yeah, I was just gonna say I think that's a really good insight. It reminds me of something I was reading about in a textbook called like the second best theory. It essentially states that economies don't exist in a vacuum. Neither do firms, neither do people, neither do workers, and it's harmful to think about it in a way where you just address, say, this is good, this is bad. There's always a trade-off. There are always people winning and losing. So I think that is an important thing to point out. So we're running out of time. But I just want to ask one question. So I know you're interning in DC, if the viewers don't know that. So you're kind of around a lot of politicians, and I bet you're thinking about the election. So I would like to ask, do you see federal legislation regarding the minimum wage changing following the election? And I know this depends on your prediction of the outcome, but yeah.
I don't think there will be any politicians who will run on a platform that says, for example, we're going to abolish the minimum wage. That does not appeal to much of the electorate. And even if you say you're going to replace it with more earned income tax credit or more other redistributive policies, the optics of that isn't favorable for many politicians. Joe Biden has previously, I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but either Joe Biden or other Democrats have floated the idea of a $15 federal minimum wage. I think that'll be particularly harmful, but I don't see a future in which that is implemented federally, mainly because that would require a substantial majority in both houses to be able to push past the finish line. So I don't think that the regulatory framework surrounding a minimum wage would change based on the 24 election.
We've been talking in extremes for a little bit. We've used California as an example of a what you call a harmful minimum wage because it's too high. It's $20 now. But do you think that there is an optimal minimum wage that kind of bridges the gap between unemployment and just a level of life that's acceptable?
There is an argument to be made that we are going to sort of government should find the optimal employment amount and to rectify this monopsony issue. And I'm sympathetic to that argument, but the problem is any form of sort of political system that places the ability to set the minimum wage regulations on the hands of government is not going to be the most sort of economically efficient, in that the free market is always more effective at finding what is the most sort of efficient or what works the most optimally. And the idea that government can sort of find the optimal wage rate by a group of experts and then be able to push that past a democratic political system, I think it is highly unlikely. And that's why, I mean, in a lot of talks of tax reform, for example, people are hesitant to introduce a sales tax or a value added tax in the US, even though that might be more economically prudent or economically favorable than as much as we're reliant on income taxes currently. But the idea of introducing a new tax and then believing that government will be able to make it more efficient, I think is politically difficult.
Yes, I like the take. Thank you, Jason, for your time today. It was really great to hear your points. Thank you for the listeners for tuning into Inflation Nation. We appreciate your time. Yeah.
Appreciate being on.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.